Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, a handful of headlines when it comes to the fight against COVID-19 in the United States and around the world. Creedy, we mentioned that there is a panel of scientists from around the world who've been cautioning that most people won't actually need a booster shot because vaccines are performing so well. In the meantime, we do see on the Bloomberg vaccine tracker, more than 5.71 billion doses have been administered. Cases, though, surpassing 224.7 million, deaths exceeding 4.63 million. Let's get into it with Dr. Olajide Williams, Chief of Staff of Neurology at Columbia University, also the founder of Hip Hop Public Health. The organization works to deliver positive health behavior change through the transformative power of music, art, and science. Dr. Williams, it's great to have you back on the show. I should note Bloomberg Philanthropies has provided a grant to Hip Hop Public Health. I want to start with the booster news, Dr. Williams. Where do you fall when it comes to whether or not we need boosters?
Well, I think that the general population, I don't think there's compelling evidence to support the fact that the general population needs booster shots. However, I do support booster shots for certain populations, especially those who are immunocompromised and more vulnerable.
What about age? Does age, where does general population fall when it comes to age? Should people over the age of 60 or 65?
I think there's not enough compelling evidence outside of those who have really weak immune systems to receive the booster. And even in those situations, I think the booster is not really looked at as a booster shot, but a third dose, as opposed to a true booster where we really don't have sufficient evidence. You know, what we're seeing is that there is a difference between falling antibody levels and vaccine efficacy. And we know, you know, from immunology that, mild disease is more dependent on, you know, protection from these neutralizing antibodies. However, a more severe disease, involves not just your humoral immune system, which is in the neutralizing antibodies that people are also concerned about that are falling. Severe disease also involves memory responses and another type of immunity called cell-mediated immunity. And the cell-mediated immunity and these memory responses have a longer-lived lifespan. And so we are going to see breakthrough cases, and we are going to see some mild disease, but the vaccines are still pretty good at keeping people out of the hospital and preventing severe disease.
Dr. Williams, you make a great point about that. Essentially, this idea that when you do take the vaccine, your symptoms become a lot less severe. But does that also lead to potentially a larger likelihood of contracting the virus simply because you do have your guard down? I believe there was a study coming out of, I want to say, Scotland or the UK, really where they started to see a lot of the new virus cases coming or happening in people that were actually vaccinated. How do you kind of think about that?
Well, my biggest concern remains the unvaccinated. Mm. That is my biggest concern. The unvaccinated, and also countries around the world where they don't even have vaccines available for their populations. I'm concerned about those two situations for the same reason. One, I think the focus on getting booster shots, has kind of clouded. Begin to slowly eclipse the more serious issue, which is getting the unvaccinated vaccinated, because that is where the real threat lies. We know that the vaccine efficacy is sufficient to prevent severe disease even now, but what we also know is that the cases we're seeing in our hospital as of today, we have 220 cases of COVID in our hospital where I am. I'm at New York Presbyterian Columbia. Thankfully, our cases seem to be plateauing. But one of the things that's completely unequivocal is that 99% of our cases are among the unvaccinated. The breakthroughs that we see are typically in the outpatient setting. People come into the offices, they have a little mild infection breakthrough, and they go home and they quarantine, et cetera, et cetera. But the real threat is that, yes, with the Delta variant, we can be carriers of this. Of the virus, even if we're asymptomatic or exhibiting mild disease. But if we come across the unvaccinated individuals, they can be severely sick from this disease still and potentially die. And that is what we're seeing today. And so our emphasis, in my opinion, needs to really focus on those unvaccinated people, because they're the ones that are most vulnerable to getting sick and dying in the hospital. And on the same note, we also need to pay attention to some of our low middle income countries, because, that's where we're more likely to get another new variant appearing and potentially causing havoc around the world.
Dr. Williams, you make a great point about simply the divergence that you're seeing between those emerging markets and developed markets. I want to very quickly ask you if what you're seeing in kind of the emerging market space, where they are truly trying to kind of accelerate their vaccinations, what does the time frame look like to really do that?
Well, I think a lot of these low middle income countries, they're really crippled by poor infrastructure. And poor testing capabilities, poor infrastructure, poor vaccine distribution capability. That is a real challenge. But a lot of these governments are really trying to kind of ramp up their infrastructure, and they're getting some support from the international community now. And we're seeing, more vaccines arrive in some of these countries.
I want to get right back to Dr. Olajide Williams, Chief of Staff of Neurology at Columbia University, also the founder of Hip Hop Public Health. Bloomberg Philanthropies has provided a grant to Hip Hop Public Health. The organization works to deliver positive health behavior change to the transformative power of music, art, and science. Dr. Williams, I want to get an update from you about what has worked and what has not been working when it comes to getting communities of color vaccinated. If I look at New York City statistics, I can see that Black and Hispanic Blacks only 42% here of all ages who are eligible to be vaccinated in the city have gotten vaccinated. That compares to 80% of Asians, 57% of Hispanic and Latinos, and 51% of whites. Give us an update from your end.
Yeah, well, the good news is that the numbers are going up. We've seen these numbers go up, especially over the last few months. And I expect that these numbers to continue to rise. And I think it's a combination of a couple of factors that are driving these rising vaccination rates. I think one of them is this continued, grassroots, one-on-one counseling, just completely overwhelming, the media, community organizations, getting our churches on board, working one-on-one with individuals, just the message has become almost ubiquitous now, and these conversations have been, you know, have been really supported by some of the mandates, you know, the sticks that are coming into play across New York City, where employers, including where I am right now, are now mandating the vaccine.
Dr. Williams, just in the last minute that we have with you, can you talk a little bit about the success of community immunity and the follow-up that you're working on in just a couple weeks?
Sure. Yeah, we're so excited by community immunity. It's been received across this country. Multiple organizations are sharing this resource, community organizations, community health workers. And what we're seeing is it's really sparking a lot of conversations. And it's really, we believe, helping to move the needle that we're seeing, not only in New York City, but across this country. We recently added a new video on the variant, which we released recently. And our most recent project is the big launch of our Spanish community immunity series. And we're very, very excited about that.
And when does that one launch?
That will be launching within the next next few weeks. So please stay tuned. We will be making some announcements very soon. And we're very, very excited by this because we think it not only has direct, it's not only important for this country, but I think it could also help with some of our Latin South American countries and our Latin Spanish-speaking countries surrounding us.
Dr. Olajide Williams, it is always great when you join us. Thank you so much for taking the time. Dr. Williams is Chief of Staff of Neurology at Columbia University, also the founder of Hip Hop Public Health. Bloomberg Philanthropies has provided a grant to Hip Hop Public Health. It's an organization that works to deliver positive health behavior change through the transformative power of music, art, and science.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So you might remember just a few months ago after England lost to Italy, in July in the final UEFA European Championship, black players for the British side faced an onslaught of bananas. It wasn't physical fruit. They were emoji slung at their social media profiles, along with other racist imagery, including images of monkeys. With us now is Joel Weber, editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. He's with us in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Also joining us, Ivan Levingston, European tech and advertising reporter at Bloomberg News. He joins us on the phone from London. Joel, whenever I read a story like this, I think to myself, I thought we had the best and brightest working for these companies. How can they not get this type of content moderation under control?
Well, it's one thing when it's words, which I think is a struggle in and of itself, and something that the tech companies have done a reasonable job of at least attempting to address. But emojis bring up a whole other challenge. And I thought that that was interesting, especially just because of the one of the interesting things about this article I found was even just the history of bananas. And once upon a time, 30 years ago, there was an episode that the story goes into where physical bananas were used. And now, obviously, we're talking digital ones. So, Ivan, talk to us about emojis and why they are such a challenge for tech companies.
Sure thing, and thanks for the interest. Tech companies have grappled for years with abusive speech on their platforms, and in some ways, emojis are just an extension of that. You know, people adapting new forms of communication to harassment. Unfortunately, it happens, as speech and abuse adapts, it poses a new challenge for social media companies and content moderating algorithms, because these algorithms will be trained oftentimes on older text. And so when they encounter a newer character, like an emoji, they have to start from scratch, essentially, in figuring out what it means. So I've even heard emojis described as a sort of a loophole, because the algorithms are a little bit behind on analyzing them.
That's really interesting. Ivan, how do you really tackle something like this in a world where pictures are always evolving, where their messages are constantly evolving, especially in this climate? How does a tech company actually manage this? Is it just about the algorithms, or do you actually have to have kind of the human component in it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I explored in the story. I think on the one hand, defenders of the tech companies will say that emojis are very complex to understand. A picture is worth 1,000 words. Is a winky face a flirtation or suggesting a joke? On the other hand, perhaps this is a place where human moderators and some kind of basic ground rules, I guess, can play a part. Maybe an algorithm that might take millions of examples to understand if an emoji is being used appropriately or not, a human moderator might be able to very quickly make that judgment call and help train the algorithm. Or, I interviewed a startup called Respondology that works with a lot of sports organizations, and they offer a very simple screening tool where you can say, okay, these are some emojis that we just don't want on our athletes' profiles, and just we're not going to worry about what do they mean in this context or that. We're just going to kind of blanket hide these comments.
So where specifically do the tech platforms come into this? What did Facebook, the company that owns Instagram, tell you? And what about Twitter?
They stressed that, they're worried about all abusive speech, including emojis, and that they were, active in the hours after the Euros football match. But it's hard to really know what's going on inside the black box in terms of how they're tweaking the algorithms to tackle emojis.
And are there, you mentioned a couple in the story, and obviously we've mentioned a couple already that are emojis that can be, used for hate. And is anyone keeping score about like what the ones that are the worst are? And is one of the solutions simply to like in a moment where something is trending just to make it not available anymore?
Yeah, I think Facebook, that's one of the things that they're doing, is they've added a few kind of classic strings of emojis that are used almost always in an abusive way to what sounds like a no-fly list. I haven't seen any kind of a scoreboard, unfortunately, that we would even need one. But, I think like the monkey emoji, the banana emoji, these are classic used in racist ways. And I also mentioned in the piece, you know, the money bag emoji. I think I saw the yellow star emoji had been linked to, you know, anti-Semitic incidents.
What's crazy here is also that professional athletes end up being the ones that are targeted the most. And obviously they're high profile and have huge social following. So it's, so to some extent it makes sense there. But has there been noteworthy sort of hate directed at anybody else that has caught attention of the network, of the social media companies and tech companies?
To be honest, when I was searching, you know, in terms of very recent, the soccer player is actually found to be kind of the tip of the spear on this. You know, it's been going on for a couple of years, but there seems to be a real issue in terms of soccer players getting abusive emojis on social media. And I thought it was really interesting. I mean, it's not only limited to soccer. Again, this startup Respondology that works with sports teams, you know, their president was telling me that when they go, and they work with the Detroit Pistons and NASCAR, and their president was telling me, you know, when we sit down with sports executives, emojis almost always, you know, come up pretty quickly. It's a widespread issue for athletes.
Ivan, let's take this international here because we're talking about a European championship. Things mean different. Different pictures mean different things in various countries and various parts of the world. Did you come across your reporting basically how some of these international tech companies are translating, for example, these international messages? Like I said, a banana emoji, for example, might mean something different in the UK, might mean something completely different in let's say, Southern Asia, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually discussing with someone today an example of, you know, a player whose nickname is the Gorilla, apparently. I wasn't aware of this example, but his nickname is the Gorilla, and I guess, you know, there were issues with people kind of cheering him on, posting gorillas on his page, and, you know, these comments, I guess, were being deleted because they were being taken as a sign of abuse when they really weren't. So it's certainly a nuanced issue. And again, I think I mentioned the piece, you know, a few other kind of examples from the past, like, you know, Apple, about 5 years ago, I think there was encouragement to, you know, allow for, you know, different skin toned emojis. And then there ended up being some criticism that actually allowing different skin tone emojis created, you know, enabled new kinds of, abuse and you know, the Indonesian government.
Ivan, we're going to have to leave it there, but this is a story that everybody should check out. It's available at Bloomberg.com. Ivan Lemmingston, European tech and advertising reporter. His story will be featured in the upcoming issue of Business Week magazine. Read it now on the Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com/Business Week. Also joining us, Joel Weber, editor of Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
It's Bloomberg Business Week. Tim Stenovic and Kriti Gupta live in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio. These stories continue to come out of China. We are fortunately joined by Andy Brown, editorial director at Bloomberg New Economy. He joins us on the phone from New Hampshire. Andy, your Saturday Bloomberg New Economy newsletter, you write about after President Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, he made it known that he wanted to turn China into a soccer superpower, host the World Cup and win it. Responding to that challenge, some of China's richest tycoons developed a passion for the, quote, beautiful game, and they splashed out on soccer clubs and star players. But today, the fortunes of the tycoons who sought to curry favor with Xi, they are sinking fast. What's going on?
Yeah, so this is a sort of a little morality tale, if you like. As you just note, Xi comes to power, and he wants to turn around Chinese soccer. And some of the richest tycoons in China decide that they want to ingratiate themselves with him by investing massively in soccer, the game, both in China and overseas. And they set up clubs that you know, attract players from the top clubs in Europe and Latin America. And the best example of this, a prime example, was Guangzhou Evergrande, which was set up by Xu Jiayin, the chairman of Evergrande, this massive real estate conglomerate, and Alibaba's Jack Ma. So this whole effort has basically blown up. The Chinese men's soccer team is about as pitiful today as it was when Xi Jinping took power. It ranked something like 71st in the world versus 77th when he took over. It's just about to crash out of the World Cup qualifiers, lost 1-0 to Japan. Meanwhile, billionaires as a class are out of favor in China, and in particular, Jack Ma is in trouble.
So what is the international reaction to this? I mean, you talked about one in your column, I should say, one foreign signing, such as Colombian striker Jackson Martinez. So, I mean, people know this is happening. What has the international fallout been like?
This is really, apart from the fact that China is not the global soccer superpower that Xi Jinping hoped it would be, this is really a domestic story where Xi Jinping is now decided that he's seen enough of the obscene wealth being generated by a relatively small number of billionaires in China, although a number that is increasing very rapidly. And he wants them to give back, and they're being shaken down for billions of dollars to promote what he calls common prosperity or a more equitable society.
So, Andy, connect this to what's happening with the Evergrande crisis as it escalates, as protests break out across China. The group is facing mounting protests by home buyers, retail investors, and even its own employees, raising the stakes for authorities in Beijing as they try to prevent the property giant's debt crisis from sparking social unrest.
Yeah, this is a different aspect of the crisis. This is the government deciding that it wants to rein in the debt of China's biggest property companies. And it's taking out a swath of billionaire profits and wealth. The latest billionaire couple actually to run into trouble, the husband and wife power couple, Zhang Xin and Pan Shiyi, the co-founders of Soho China, which is one of China's primary office and retail property developers. They had tried to sell their company to Blackstone, Stephen Schwarzman's Blackstone, for $3 billion. And that deal then got stuck in an anti-monopoly review, and for reasons that are still unclear but probably not unconnected to that review, which was going nowhere fast, Blackstone and Soho pulled the plug on Friday. Today you saw Soho China shares in Hong Kong plunge something like 40%.
I want to ask you about why the American investor should really be paying attention to the story going on thousands and thousands of miles away. Connect it to us for those of us who are unfamiliar.
Well, for two reasons. Firstly, because China is now a major investment destination for Wall Street firms. They're rushing into China to take advantage of the country's massive pools of savings, and they want to mediate those savings, create wealth management products. One day they hope that they'll be able to help some of that money invest overseas. But second of all, that there are a lot of $2 trillion worth of Chinese shares which are traded in the U.S., and so American funds, including pension funds, are pretty heavily exposed to what's happening over there. And what's happening right now is this crackdown on the tech sector, which appears to be broadening now to much of the private entrepreneurial class in China.
Is any sector safe from the crackdown?
Well, you hear people like Kathy Wood of saying, you know, you've got to invest in those sectors that the government favors. And so that might be so-called hard tech versus soft tech or consumer tech. It's really hard to say. I mean, you know, the crackdown has been so broad. It's covered so many sectors, from fintech to edtech to real estate. It's really difficult to know what exactly the government's intention is, and if it really is a generalized attempt to essentially soak the rich to pay the poor. The government says it's not, but it does certainly seem to be that way. Pretty much any company now that, you know, has wealthy private billionaire owners is going to find itself in some way or another a target.
That's certainly a large number of companies and a relatively large number of people as well. Andy Brown, editorial director of Bloomberg New Economy Forum. Andy, thank you as always for taking the time. We really appreciate it. He joins us on the phone from New Hampshire.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car, I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
It is the Drive to the Close, and we are just over 10 minutes away from the market close on this Monday, September 13th. Another choppy session. Market really looking for direction. We do see the S&P 500 higher, but just barely right now, not even a point. The Dow higher by close to 0.6%. The NASDAQ, though, in the red, down close to 0.3%. Let's get all into it with Ross Gerber, President and CEO at Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment Management. He joins us on the phone from beautiful Santa Monica, California. Ross, how are things by the beach?
It actually is beautiful.
Oh, interesting. Like it always
it's
is there.
Quite good.
I can say that as a Californian. I know that it's always nice. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about what you think has been happening in the markets, because if we do see the S&P 500 close lower today, and it could, it's fluctuating between positive and negative territory, it'll be a 6-day in a row of declines, something that we haven't seen for months. What do you make of it?
I think it's great. I mean, you can't have a stock market that only goes up every day. That concerns me a lot more, you know. So a healthy pullback in stocks, you know, it's good.
What's a healthy pullback to you, though? Because this isn't even 2% yet.
Yeah, I know. It's not really a healthy pullback. I was going to say a 2% pullback is not even really a pullback. It's mostly a statistical anomaly, right? But let's say the market goes down 5 or 10%. I think we get down to a value that makes sense. So we think the S&P is worth about 4,000. It's trading a good 10% higher than it should, but that's mostly because of the tremendous liquidity that we have in markets and our economy right now, and enormous levels of spending and economic activity that we're seeing across the board. So, you know, the markets can warrant a higher valuation at this time because we have an abnormal government policy at this time. So having a little bit more volatility, I think, is an advantage for investors who know what they're doing.
I want to ask you, Ross, how does someone know when to actually buy this dip? Because that was something that we saw year to date. We saw plenty of pullbacks, less than 3%, not huge pullbacks, but pullbacks nonetheless. And people right. immediately bought the dip. So is this one of those times when you have kind of the seasonality of September kind of in your back pocket?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I do a lot. You know, I'm kind of old now, so I do a lot of research about my, you know, 28 years that I've been doing this as a professional, and many years before that as a kid. But, like, when you think about what really hurts markets, so you have corrections, or, okay, that's normal. You get one a year, a 10% correction. But then you have bear markets, and you have very, very difficult markets. And most of the time that's predicated by the Fed. So almost every real market decline we've had is because of the Federal Reserve or a banking crisis. So I don't see a banking crisis on the horizon in any way. So it's really the Federal Reserve. So the only thing that's going to make stocks go down is when you take liquidity away. And so that process is going to begin with the tapering soon, but that's not even really taking liquidity away. You know what I mean? That's just like taking a ridiculous bond buying away. And so rates themselves don't even look like they're going to go up for another year. So for investors, you want to buy the dips and keep playing the game until the Fed takes the punch bowl away.
What does it look like? What does the Fed look like when it takes the punch bowl away? What does that look like to you if it's not tapering? Is it just raising rates?
Yeah, it's raising rates, and it's usually like, what do they say? It's after the third increase is when it all goes downhill. And you really can look at this historically. You can go back to the 90s. What killed the bull market in the 90s was Alan Greenspan. He killed it. And then we had September 11th, so it extended the bear market to one of the worst three-year bear markets, probably one of the worst bear markets we had. And then followed by the financial crisis, which was really a self-created event from greed and stuff, also created because of low rates and a lack of, you know, oversight and such. And so when you go back to, you know, 90, 91, it was raising rates again and a bank crisis. So, you know, like when you think about COVID, you know, the market was down 20, 30%, and next thing you know, they're buying everything in sight to protect the market. I would argue that investors have a level of safety they've never had before in the history of markets when the Federal Reserve is also out as one of their mandates to protect the stock market. So they don't say it, but that's what they're doing. So how bad of a bear market are we really going to get before the Fed comes in and starts buying stocks or whatever, you know?
Ross, it sounds like you're completely discounting, and maybe for good reason, whether or not we even have a taper tantrum at all. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, once again, I've been doing this so long, and, you know, their valuations are elevated, so a 10% correction is warranted, and I don't know when or if that's going to happen, but I don't play the game of waiting for the correction, and then when there is one, I buy it, you know what I mean? But, like, you just have to look at liquidity. There's so much liquidity because they just keep printing money, and hence why cryptocurrencies are doing so well and why so many investors are moving money out of the traditional financial system into the crypto system.
Ross, let's transition from the macro picture to the micro picture, because I have a really interesting piece in my notes here saying that you not only own shares of Tesla, but you have a Model 3. I'm curious, and I've been dying to ask this question to someone who looks at individual stocks. How do you value, how do you price a stock like Tesla, or for that matter, any electric vehicle maker?
Well, full disclosure, I got the Model S Plaid recently in June and sold the Model 3 for Yeah, I sold it for $5,000 less than I bought it for after driving it for 3 years. So it was the best return I've ever had on a car. I was like built equity in my car. Like, that's how cool this EV business is, or electric vehicle business that Tesla's built. But I think so many investors are caught up with what I call 20th century mentality towards valuations. Okay, we're in the 21st century now. 15 PEs aren't a reality. This country is the most competitive country in the world. You literally cannot invest in any other country in the world with the same level of confidence that you do in U.S. equities. Not only that the companies are good, but also run with accounting standards and ethics and corporate standards that are higher than anywhere else in the world. So when you think about, if I'm a global investor, where do I put my money? Well, you know, it's got to be the U.S. And then you think about companies that are innovating and creating amazing products and services that are going to change the world, and there's only a handful of those. And then you think about, what are the two biggest industries that are being disrupted right now? And you have transportation and you have energy, and Tesla is the one doing it. So to look at a traditional P.E. ratio would be a mistake when you're trying to value Tesla, when you're talking about a company that is really cornered the market in battery production and technology, as well as EV production and technology, AI, robotics. I mean, it's endless. Tesla is trading, I think, for what it's worth right now.
$745 a share, $744
a
share.
Yeah, I think it's worth about $750, and I think its upside is to about $1,000 when they complete their two factories and get those up and running, which could be by the end of the year. So, you know, when they get to two more factories, they'll be able to double production. And so if they have the production capability to double production in a time where most car companies are cutting production because they simply can't make cars, it's a huge opportunity, not to mention the enormous demand for vehicles irrelevant of Tesla.
Russ Gerber,
great opportunity.
Unfortunately, have to leave it there. We always love chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking the time. Russ is president and CEO of Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment Management. He joins us on the phone from Santa Monica, California.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success. It's discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management and investment banking firms in the industry. Stifel. It's where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated. Member SIPC and NYSE.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.